You see, so many people had pinned their hopes on Jesus. All sorts of different hopes. People had pinned the hope of liberty on Jesus. They knew that they were a people oppressed. They had centuries of history of oppression, of foreign rule, and not only rule, but religious oppression. The people had been, you know, held captive to religious process that had come to a place that it meant nothing. And people wanted liberty, and they saw Jesus as the great liberator, the Messiah who's going to come and, you know, overthrow the rule, and we're going to be free. And there were people who had sort of pinned their hopes of power or position, authority on Jesus. And he had made them the elect, and he had made them leaders. And they even got to the point that they were arguing amongst themselves as to who was most important. People had pinned wholeness on Jesus. He was the great miracle worker, the great healer, and there were going to be none sick left. And just if I get my turn, it's all good, it's all over. They pinned their whole meaning on Jesus, that as long as they were around him, you know, they had meaning. And we talked about how it led up to this time that Jesus had entered Jerusalem and everyone was celebrating, but within days, the news begins to be whispered. He's been arrested. And it moved from arrest to he's been brutalized and beaten. And he's been taken to the cross. And he's dead. And hope was stripped away. And the beautiful illustration of it was Lauren painted these, you know, just scripted words of each of those four themes: liberty and power and wholeness and meaning. And this word hope on a beautiful, you know, yellow banner. But it was an interesting thing because, you know, there were people here, we found out later, that had hopes that they were going to take the painting home. And so the moment that Lauren picked up this roller and black paint and began to just erase those words on these canvases, you just heard this, and that was over canvas. But imagine the air and that, when all your hopes are laid waste to. And the thing was that hope was almost erased. But you can never erase hope that does not depend on you. That it is an eternal promise. But this is how unexpected it was. I imagine the day between, the first day was the day of the crucifixion, and the third day is the day of the resurrection. But what do you imagine the mood of the second day? What do you imagine the mood of the Saturday? I don't know if you've been around death that you're so close to it and it causes this ache. And there's no way that you can just naturally overcome it. I will never forget being with a mother who had full expectation. She'd come to full term and was gone in for delivery. And something went wrong. And I got to the hospital and to the room right as the doctor came and said, "Your child is dead." And I will never forget the howl of the soul that came out of that mother. And some of you may be familiar with that, and some of you have experienced death in other ways. But when it is unexpected and it takes over you, there is something that happens that this grief and despair just bellows from within. And I imagine that that Saturday was a dark, dark day of the soul for many people. And they did not know what the next day held. They had no idea. In fact, the text that we read says that these ladies, they'd spent the evening before preparing spices. Why? To deal with the stink of death. They weren't coming to greet Jesus. They were coming to grieve and to mourn and to lay it all aside, but to at least give him some dignity. And when they found that he was not there, it says that they told these things, they left the tomb and they came back and they told these things to the other 11 and to the others, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them. They told this to the disciples. Verse 11 of Luke 24's account says this, but they did not believe the women, because to them it seemed like nonsense, rubbish, impossible. You read in verse 12, Peter got up and he ran to the tomb and he bent over and he saw the strips of linen lying there in the tomb and he went away wondering to himself what had happened. No idea, no expectation of this resurrection. As much as Peter wonders what has happened, I know that they're wondering, you know, what next? What's our future from here? I mean, if they took down Jesus, they're hunting us for sure. It was Peter who gets questioned by the fire. Weren't you one of Jesus' followers? And he's like, no, not me, no way. You got me confused with someone else. And there's this fear that has settled in. And for Peter, so much more. He never got to say sorry. He never got to be reconciled to Jesus. Can you imagine the grief of his heart? So he comes to the tomb with some sense of hope, but he walks away like, far out. What's happened? Mark records that when those disciples heard that Jesus was alive and that one of the women had seen him, that now Mary has encountered him and come back and told them, they did not believe it. Again, in verse 13, these others returned and reported it to the rest of them, but they did not believe it either. There is just disbelief. This didn't happen. And it didn't make sense to the natural mind, even though Jesus had preempted it. He'd told them. But you know what I love about this? And this is the story that is woven through the Bible if we will have ears to hear it. Jesus went and sought them out. Jesus, who has risen from the grave, he begins to just search out each one of these individuals. They don't believe it. They don't expect it. And so he just goes to them. Isn't that, if you read the book of Genesis, isn't that what happens right in the beginning? Mankind rejects God. We'll do what we see fit to do. Enough of your rule over us. Now it's time for our rule over us. God, knowing it has happened, what does he do? He goes out looking for them. And he knows where they're hiding, so he goes to where they're hiding and he says, why are you hiding? And they begin this series of excuses and God says, you know what? You are going to do the journey of life according to your choice. You've chosen to reject my ways. You can live with all the results of that. And you're going to live in a broken world. But all the way through, God weaves himself in. All the time, he's reaching out to people. This is why I love this image that was created in the first service this morning. That it is God who perpetually reaches out to us. The response is ours. And this morning, you're going to be given that choice. What's your response? You see, when Jesus rises from the grave, Mary comes grieving to the tomb. And Jesus appears to her at the tomb and says, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she turns around and thinks it's the gardener, is what the account says. And in her confusion and her despair, she says, "Please, please, just tell me what you've done with him. Please, let me go and care for him. Just tell me where you put him, please." And what does Jesus do? Does he rebuke her? Does he correct her? Does she tell her how foolish she is? Why didn't she understand? Why don't you remember the things I tell you guys? No. He simply turns and he says, "Mary." And she in that moment just falls apart. The disciples are hiding away in a room with locked doors and locked windows, terrified, full of doubt, full of despair. Jesus doesn't even knock, it says he just appears in the room. And the first thing he says to them is this: "Peace." He doesn't correct them, he doesn't rebuke them, he doesn't challenge them. He just walks in and he says, "Peace." One of them isn't there, is a fellow named Thomas. Thomas is well known for his analytical nature and he just doubts and he questions. And they tell him, "Thomas, we saw him. He was here, he came amongst us." And Thomas goes, "Right." He says this to them: "You know what? I can't believe. I can't believe unless I see him, and not only see him, that I'll put my fingers in the wounds in his hands, and I will put my hand in the hole in his chest cavity. Then I'll believe." So what does Jesus do? Jesus comes to him and goes, "Thomas, if that's what you need, then do it." You can see him pulling back his robe and going, "Thomas, if that's what you need, go ahead. Go ahead, put your hand there. You do what you need to do." But Jesus says this: "But stop doubting and just believe." The account of Jesus where the fishermen have gone back to the beaches and Jesus comes to them. And what does he do? While they're out there, he's cooking them breakfast on the beach. This is the nature of God who pursues us when we are lost in despair, when we are lost in doubt, when we've pretty much abandoned everything. He's the one that deliberately comes and searches us out. This is what hope restored is all about. It doesn't make sense. This is what's such a great paradox in the human mind, that hope has come from weakness, that hope has come from vulnerability, that hope was born in death and in resurrection. You see, Jesus was a man who was hunted from birth. If you know his story, he was plotted against, betrayed by a friend, ultimately died a cruel death. But he was still the one that was going to bring hope into a very, very broken world. It's not what people were expecting. But in defiance of the way of the world and defiance of the natural mind, Jesus was the one that would defeat that threat and that scourge of death once and for all. And in its place, he would bring hope of new life, of new creation, of new meaning, of new liberty, of new wholeness, of new authority. Everything that we had longed for, Jesus says, "I will restore it, but not as you expect it." This is the restoration of hope. Without the resurrection, the scope of the horizon gets real small. We remain debtors to death if there was no restoration of life. You see, in Romans chapter 5, you read this. Listen to these words. You see, at just the right time, when we were still utterly powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely would anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good person someone might possibly take the place of and dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love for us that while we were still sinners, still rebels, still reprobate, still the runaway, the renegade, we were then reconciled to Him through the death of His Son. And how much more, having been reconciled, will we be saved through His life? We have the gift of life held out to us. The real gift of liberty, the real gift of authority, the real gift of wholeness, the real gift of meaning handed to us, and our choice is this: what are we going to do? You see, people wanted this sense of liberty. They wanted liberty from oppression, the external thing, and they wanted comfort. We're tired of this. We want to be comforted. We want those authoritarian, you know, powers removed. We want the religious oppressors removed. We want liberty. But Jesus knew what true liberty was going to look like, what it was going to take. Because they weren't just held captive to outside oppressors. You know what? We think we live in a free land. We celebrate our freedoms. Those of us with American heritage, we celebrate the land of liberty. But here's the thing. Every single one of us are bound, subject to the captor of selfishness, self-centeredness, self-fulfillment, self-obsession. We don't walk in liberty. We walk in a captivity of the soul. Jesus said this, "I tell you the truth, everyone is a slave to sin. Sin is the rejection of God and the elevation of self over Him." All humanity has done it somewhere. All of us here have done it somewhere. We are all, therefore, slaves to sin, to self-centeredness. And a slave has no permanent place in a family, but a son or a child of the Father belongs to it forever. So, therefore, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. You want liberty? Then let the Son set you free. The one who defeated death, the one who took captivity captive, let Him set you free. And you get set free at the very core of who you are. And it doesn't matter what external oppression comes. It doesn't matter what country might rule us. It does not matter a thing. Because at the very core of who we have been declared free. Free of sin, free of the sting of death, free of captivity. You see, we needed liberating from ourselves long before we needed liberating from a oppressive power. Our problem is that we have a bondage to that self. I mentioned them, but it's self-rule and self-gratification and self-indulgent. The rule of self needed to be broken. And the message of the good news of Jesus is this, that Jesus is the source and the hope of perpetual freedom. I love what Paul writes. He says, "It's for freedom that Christ set us free. Stand firm in that freedom and don't let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery." not a slavery to religious ritual or mandate, not slaves to anything that is enforced upon you. You are free. 2 Corinthians, Paul writes, where the Spirit of God is, there is freedom. There is a warning in it, brothers, sisters, you're called to be free, but don't just use that freedom to indulge that same old human nature. Instead, change it, flip it on its head. Don't serve yourself, serve others. Serve one another like they have worth. Serve one another humbly in love. The liberty is a liberty of heart that cannot be stolen. The barrier of sin stripped away. There's a freedom to come to Christ. Where people had hidden away in shame and in guilt, that is stripped away, and Jesus says, come. And I love the image that Jesus painted when he gathered with people, and he used to identify little children and go, you know what, unless you're willing to come to me in the simplicity of one of these little ones, you'll never even enter the kingdom of heaven. It's not some formula, it's not some ritual, it's not some regime that you have to meet up to. It's just the simplicity of surrender. Don't let that barrier remain between you. Come. Know that restored embrace of God, that life that springs forth. That barrier broken, us set free. Our longing for position, for power to be identified. I referred to it Friday when those two of the followers of Jesus just start this argument, because the two of them are just pushing for position, for influence, for power. And Jesus calls them all together and he says, you know that those who are regarded as rulers in this earthly world lord it over people. They stake their claim for authority and position. But not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great better learn what it is to be a servant. You who want to be the greatest of all, then you better start understanding what it is to be the slave of all. Totally flipped. For the Son of Man himself did not even come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. This is what Jesus says. When people are bickering about position and power, Jesus just takes it apart and he goes, you miss the point. God was never about even demanding his power. You wanted your power, your authority over yourself, then here, have it. But choke on it. But I'll offer you an understanding of where real power comes from. Paul again encourages us. He says, in your relationships with one another, make sure you've got the same mindset that Jesus had. Though he was absolutely co-equal with God, he didn't consider that equality with God something to be used to his own advantage, something to be demanded over others. He made himself nothing. He took on the nature of a servant, found in human likeness, found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself. And he became obedient to death. But God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that's above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee would bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord forever. You know, so often we want the power, want the position. God, if you'll give me this, if you'll do this, then I'll serve you. God goes, no, you got it flipped. We got to learn what it is to surrender and serve. We're brought into God's family. We're called sons and daughters, joint heirs with Jesus of the Most High God. This is what God gives us, this position that we never deserved, but because of his love, his forgiveness, his grace. That instead of hiding, we're restored. Instead of running away, we're embraced. And wholeness, You know, wholeness is a funny thing. In Jesus' day, they wanted, you know, wholeness healing. They wanted to be free of this stuff. And that's how we so often treat it. We just want to feel better. I just don't want to suffer anymore. I don't want the sickness. I don't want pain. I don't want those things. You know, what we so often do is deal with what's called the presenting situation or the presenting illness. I know what this is about. I broke my ankle two or three years ago now. And, you know, I thought it was probably broken. And so I took myself to the hospital and, you know, hobble across the parking lot and get into the, you know, the waiting room, get an x-ray done. And yes, the presenting situation is you've broken your ankle. So what do we need to do? We need to put a cast on it and you need to be off it for 6 weeks and then the bone will heal and you'll be good to go. So I do that, go through it, get the cast off. Man, it is sore still. So I wait. Weeks go by. I go back to the doctor. Man, this is still so sore. And my doctor says, well, it's probably just, you know, that it's the muscles are weak and you're using different things and it's getting sore as you're walking on it. Just take another couple of months. So I take another couple of months. It's getting worse. So finally I go to the doctor and I said, man, this, you know, I can put up with pain, but this thing hurts. So he says, maybe we should get an MRI. So we get an MRI. Well, then they come back to me and they're like, well, we missed something. You actually, in that accident, severed what's called your talus fibular ligament, and now it's just completely built up scar tissue around it, and it's never going to be the same again. Unless you get a full, you know, surgery, it's going to be painful. But you're not an athlete, are you? I'm like, thanks, that's a great compliment. I was looking at myself thinking that I had you fooled, but he says it's probably not worth getting the surgery. You're just probably going to have to put up with it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Now, if we had actually taken care of it back then, it might be a different situation. Oh, yes, very different situation. So I know what, I've never had it fixed. I just know what it is to limp, try and play sports on it, and then take painkillers for a while afterwards. But we deal with whatever's presenting. Let's deal with that. And wholeness, we just want the pain taken away. Just make it better. Just give me something for the situation. But it's so much more than dealing with the discomfort. Jesus came to restore what's broken. And the things that are broken are so deep inside. It's the things that we're ashamed of, that we hide away. The things we've said, the things we've done, the things where we know we're guilty. We don't want the light shone in the deep places of our hearts. We don't want our thoughts to be known. And we still just resist. Jesus says, I'll give you wholeness, but it's going to mean taking apart those places in the deep parts of who you are. And bringing light and restoration to them. Again, it's the sin issue. We don't just need healing in the outside, we need healing on the inside. And this is the thing, Jesus actually brought this to a head, to a point of conflict, where it's recorded in Matthew's account of Jesus. And it says, Jesus came to his own hometown and some friends brought out a paralyzed man lying on a mat. They bring this guy who's been paralyzed his whole life and they present him to Jesus. And when Jesus saw their faith, he says to the man, take heart, son, your sins are forgiven. I reckon that they sort of look at each other like, did Jesus not see that there's like an issue here? We didn't bring this guy here to hear that his sins are forgiven. We brought him here that the hope would be that he'd get up and walk. Has Jesus like missed the point? But Jesus is really waiting on this, knowing the hearts of the people. It says there are some religious leaders there, and they just begin to murmur. Man, listen to this man. Here he is, he's blaspheming. And Jesus knows their thoughts. And Jesus says, why do you entertain evil thoughts in your hearts? Which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or get up and walk? What Jesus is saying, is it easier for me to say, oh, it's all right, the internal parts are done with, because there's no check of that. It's easy to say, oh, the internal stuff's taken care of, and do nothing. But Jesus says this, but I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sin. And so he said to the paralyzed man, now get up and take your mat and go home. And it says the man got up and went home. And this sent it into an uproar because Jesus goes, you think you need the outside fixing, but I know the deep places. And he goes, take heart because I'll forgive your sin. Jesus did things on the outside so that people would know he had authority over the whole person. Do you want to walk in liberty? Do you want to walk in a right sense of authority? Do you want to walk in wholeness? Then respond to Jesus' invitation to surrender your life to him, to let him have his way in you. Because this is where real meaning comes from. People found meaning was in popularity. They thought it was going to be being around Jesus. They thought it was about hanging out with him. But it wasn't. Life just as an existence that ends in dust is futile. What a waste. What's the point? But Jesus came to reveal God to us, to restore right relationship with him, to offer forgiveness and to give us meaning. The hope we have is that because of the life and the death of, and the resurrection of Jesus, that the new has come. The old has gone. The new is here, and we can walk in that newness of life now. You can have that newness of life today. You can be restored to that right relationship with God today. You, if you've responded to that, should celebrate the confidence that you have that it is done. It is never to be removed. You will never be taken captive again as you remain surrendered to Jesus. But what's beautiful in this is Jesus then says, hey, this is why I came, to set the world free, not to accuse it, to set it free. And you want meaning? Here's the meaning I offer you. And Jesus says this to his friends. How about you start doing what I came here to do? How about you start living like your life has hope and has purpose? That you understand what God's authority is over you, that you understand servanthood and humility, that you understand what wholeness is. How about we start living that together? How about we start a revolution in this world that is a revolution of hope instead of despair? How about we begin to declare the kingdom of God in our own lives and in our families and in our communities and in this nation and in this earth? How about we do that? All right, good. There's six of us on board. This is what meaning is. This is what Jesus says. I'll give you purpose. Be about what I'm about. Live the life that I've given you to live. Live it in liberty. Don't let anyone take it captive again. And in turn, you become agents of hope. You become agents of restoration. You become agents of liberty. You become agents of humility. You become agents of wholeness. You become agents of meaning. Man, our lives should declare it to the world. If you're looking for those things, liberty, wholeness, meaning, come to Jesus. If you look at this image over here, and some of you on this side may not see it very clearly, it's a hand extended to another hand within the context of life. But the question for us is today, what's our response to that resurrection life of Jesus? You'll either finish that extension of the hand or you'll withdraw it. And you'll withdraw it with that sense of, you know what, okay, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to stick with self-preservation. I'm going to stick with self-empowerment. I'm going to stick with self-indulgence. I'm going to stick with self. Because to respond to God means surrender to His ways. And that's the choice. Your choice to this image is in the context of life. Do you stand off or do you receive the restoration? It's always a choice because Jesus searches us out, whether we're hiding in shame or guilt or fear or whatever it is. He searches us out and He puts Himself in our midst. Today might be the first morning you've ever been aware of it. And He stands there and He says, do you want it? When I first knew that Jesus was pursuing me, I had such a visual. I had someone that offered to pray with me, a girl named Jenny or Mel. She said, Tim, I want to pray for you that you would just find hope and meaning. And I'm like, yeah, go ahead. That'd be great. And I'm just sitting there. She's praying for me. And I have a visual that I will never forget. There was a figure standing before me. I never saw his face. I just know that his hands were extended to me in what I sense was just an offering of himself to me. Today, I believe it was an image of Jesus. But I was on my knees on the ground with my arms wrapped around myself and my head down. And Jenny stopped praying. She goes, Tim, I'm not praying anymore. God just showed me this picture that you are so consumed with yourself that you will not even open yourself up to His approach to you. This prayer time's done. I was rocked. And you know what I did? I left that room and I decided I was going to make myself better. And for the next 2 years, I failed dismally. And it wasn't until I fell on my face in a pool of tears and I said, Jesus, if you can take these pieces and do anything with them, and if you can take these broken bits and make something beautiful out of them, they're just yours, take them. And 28 years later, I'm a very, very, very different man. That is the power of the resurrection of Jesus. That is the power of resurrection. And the question for us today is, do we want that power initiated in our lives, or do we just go, you know what? No, actually forget that. We're going to close this morning with the reminder of that offer of relationship and the restoration and the forgiveness in the sacrifice of Jesus. The night that Jesus was betrayed, before he'd even gone to the cross, he knew what was coming and he says to his friends, as we share this meal together, I want you guys to get it and I want you to get the symbolism of it. He took bread and he broke that bread. And he said, this bread is my body and it's broken for you. And whenever you break it, do it in remembrance of me. Do it in remembrance of what I've done for you. He took this cup and it was wine and we substitute it with this juice. But he takes this cup and he says, this represents my blood which is shed for you and is the forgiveness of all sin. Whenever you share it, do it in remembrance of me. And my invitation to you this morning is this. Make this your place of response. Make this your place of response. If you want to embrace that offer of forgiveness and liberty and wholeness and meaning, then come and break off a piece of bread and take that cup and do it with thanksgiving. And in your heart, thank God, thank Jesus for his love and his sacrifice for you. If you want to do it in a response that says, oh, I want to know that in my life, come, break bread, take that cup, reminding yourself of Jesus. But please, do not reduce this moment to some religious ritual. Don't. That really is an insult. Because Jesus never came to just do something religious. He didn't come to institute some religious ritual for us. He came to give us life. And it's found in His sacrifice. If you don't know how to respond, you might want to start something like this. Just talk what's in your heart. Know that God hears you and He responds to you. God, I'm trusting you hear me. You know me. And right now I have a sense that you know every hidden part of me. You know the things I hide. You know the things I lie about. You know the things I'm ashamed of. You know the things I'm captive to. You know my self-indulgence, my self-centeredness, my power-grabbing moments. I want you to set me free. Would you please come? I choose to turn away from those things and turn towards you. I choose to take hold of you as you search for me. I choose to respond to your offer of embrace, that you are the one who searches me out. And I know right now in this moment that I need your forgiveness, and I'm asking you, please forgive me. Jesus, I accept your sacrifice in my place, and I accept the power of your resurrection in my life. Bring new life to bear in me. I surrender to you.